From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
I'm Andrew Richards.
And I'm Vance Morrison.
And we are back for week three of Vance's tool, Perf View.
Indeed.
And this week we're going to talk about memory?
That's right. We're going to talk about memory. So, again, just as a quick recap, you can get Perf View just by going to any search engine and type Perf View.
Number one hit right
there. And you will get this, and you can install this in literally two clicks. One click, maybe not. You'd open it, and then you drag it to your desktop.
Move it somewhere.
Here it is. Whoa, what did it do there? There it is. And you just drag it over and say okay. So I guess it's four clicks, was that? I don't know. So anyway, that's how you get
it. Less than a minute.
Pretty quick.
Yeah. At which point you can now do what I'm about to do. So now what we're going to talk about today is we're going to switch gears a little bit. Up until now, we've been showing you the ETW-based stuff, and that basically is collecting data over time. Mm-hmm. So in this case, it turns out the best way to attack memory is to take a snapshot in time.
So ETW is more about CPU spikes, CPU hangs.
That's right.
And this is going to be about memory consumption.
That's right. Now, Sometimes memory, as we'll see, sometimes it's useful to collect things over time for memory. Because in unmanaged code, if you're doing, which, by the way, you can do with Perf View, if you needed to do a analysis of where memory is going in unmanaged.
So it's like p-invoking stuff.
Or if it's a C++ app or whatever, doesn't matter. The only thing you have is the allocation sites, where you allocated, and you can even know where you're free, but usually you don't care about that so much. You turn on instrumentation so you get all those allocation sites, mm-hmm. and you get all the stacks, and it'd be very similar. It's very similar in some sense to what you do for a CPU. But here for .NET, it's a GC heap. And it turns out for GC heaps, it doesn't actually matter where you allocate anything. What matters is who's holding on to it.
Yeah.
So you don't actually care, you know, anything that happened in the past. All you care about is that now there are things pointing at it. And so that's what we're going to do here. And so what I'm doing is going to, I have an app just to give you a very simple example of how this works is I've created an app with two very common leaks, very common memory issues associated with it. They're super common. You'll look at it and you'll say, oh, it's too trivial, but they happen all the time. So they're worth talking about. And so I have this little Windows Store app, which is literally just an adaptation of what Visual Studio gives you. And what typically happens is people look at it in something like Task Manager, and they say, oh, look, this thing uses 13.4 megabytes of memory. And then you might, you know, click around. So I click around, I, you know, do things with the app, and I get back to where I was before. And if your app doesn't have a leak, you would expect the memory to be about where it was before. Mm-hmm. And so you go back and you say, oh, 27 megabytes. Now, this particular one, to make it super easy to see, I made the leak big. But the principle still applies, which is that you do something for a while, you try to get back to the same state, and if the memory hasn't sort of come back to the same state, you have a leak.
So how much time do you have to give the system to get around to doing a GC? I mean, is it things that you should wait for seconds, hours, minutes?
The good news about this is that the analysis that I'm about to talk about doesn't care when GCs happen. Because what will happen is that when we take a snapshot, we will know what things are live and what things aren't. And we, regardless of whether a GC happened or not, because we'll start at the roots and we'll look at everything. And so we'll know what's live. We've effectively done a GC as we collect the data. Now, there is a caveat to that. If you have a application that has both managed and unmanaged code, if you care about the unmanaged memory, the only time that memory gets released is when GCs happen and the finalizers kick in and they explicitly release it. Mm-hmm. So we don't do that. When we're collecting the data, we're not going to run those finalizers and so forth. So if you're worrying about the native part of a .NET app, mm-hmm. and that's the important thing, then you actually do really have to run the GC. And I'll even show you how to do that. So anyway, the upshot is most of the time you don't care. So we have an app. I'm going to restart this app just so that we start over. because the way you would typically do this is that you want to get a snapshot, you know, at some point in time, and then you get another snapshot later that's supposed to be the same point, you know, the same memory state. And then you just see what's the difference.
Different.
So I didn't capture that first one, so I don't have the before.
Yep.
So I'm going to have to start over. And so I'm going to just launch it. I have it here. And so I'm going to launch it. And so now I can launch Perfew, or I could have had Perfew up. And I'm going to, before we went into this collect dialog box, now we're going to go into the memory one. And there are two options. The only one I'm going to show you today is this take heap snapshot. There is another one that's quite useful for people in the field, which is that if you take a process dump, a full process dump, you can extract the GC heap out of it. Mm-hmm. So everything that I'm about to do, you can also do on a full heap dump. So if you happen to have one of those, because that's part of your triaging, you know, data collection mechanism, then you can just pull the heap out of that.
What's the technology under that?
Well, there's something in .NET called SOS, or it's basically it's called a DAC, but it's basically an ability for us to look inside the memory of another process and like figure out things about .NET.
So you use SOS to get to the DAC, or do you use the DAC directly?
I use the DAC directly. Okay. Yeah. So the SOS is built on the DAC, and that's what we use.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, we did a show on CLRMD, which also uses
I see.
The DAC.
In fact, we use exactly CLRMD. Oh. So we are using CLRMD.
Yeah.
So yeah, Lee, good job.
Lee is the man.
All right. So the first thing we need to do is we need to take that before snapshot. And so I'm going to click on take keep snapshot.
Now, did it actually restart your app? Or did
no.
Because I didn't notice if you...
The beauty of this is that this app, if you're in a service, and you, by the way, I'm doing it with an app because it's very easy to do this in demo mode for an app. But it's fairly often that you want to do this for some long-running service, and there's no need to restart.
Oh.
You just take a snapshot, and then you wait some amount of time, and you watch the memory go up, and you take another snapshot, and you say, okay, let's find out what happened between those two points.
Okay.
So you don't actually have to restart if you don't want to. It's nice for the demo to restart because it's very clear how much more memory is being allocated. So I need to find the process, and here it is, this leaky CS. And I basically clicked on it, and it's taking a heap dump. And in fact... Where is it?
Thinking. It says it's still open. What's going on?
Okay. There it is, finally. And here it is. And we can actually open up the heap here. You might not get all of these little icons. In fact, I believe the one that's on the external world only has heap snap. Stacks, the one that I clicked on, it doesn't have the others. Those are for internal use. And so you'll just see, it'll probably just launch to this view. And what this view is it looks very much like that CPU view that we saw before, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with CPU. It has everything to do with memory. So in fact, what we see, again, the thing to start with is this line up here. And it shows you, it says there's 522 in this case, megabytes, I'm sorry, 522,000 bytes of memory being used in 5,937 objects. So this is showing me literally everything that's in the GC heap. And in fact, we can go to this view over here. And in the very similar way that we started in the CPU view, you started with the process, and then it had threads, and then it had stacks, and it kept going down. In the same way for the heap, the analogous thing is you start out with the whole heap, which has .NET roots, some of which are static variables, and then there are other kinds of static roots, and then a particular static variable, so this one happens to be interop services, blah blah, and then that static variable is holding on to things, and things, and things, and things.
So the prior screen's kind of like SOS's dump heap minus stats.
In fact, the people who, Lee and the people who build dump heap suggest you use this instead. So it is effectively the same information gotten from the same place. We both use CLRMD effectively to get the heap snapshot.
Yep.
And this is just, when you do it in SOS, inside the debugger, you get to see this one, you know, the views sort of are poor. You get to see the view of all objects by type, which you can do, which is effectively this by name view.
So that one, that's kind of like dump heap minus stat, and this one's kind of like bang gc root minus all.
Yeah. And the thing about it is that I get to filter and you know, group and do all sorts of wonderful things.
It's not scrolling down your screen for 10,000 lines.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the difference. The difference is that you have an actual GUI to interact with, and then you can tailor it and do all the goodness there. So this was just our before snapshot. And while it's kind of interesting, it showed me that I had a half a megabyte GC heap when I started this app up. What we want to know is what leaked. So we're going to close this up. We still have the data, and we're going to run our app a little bit more, and we're going to, you know, exercise it and exercise it some more.
So with modern apps, you're meant to, as you go into a frame or into a page, it's meant to allocate the memory, and then when you go back, it's supposed to throw it away.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, in general, a well-written app, if you get back to sort of the same view, there might be a certain amount of caching going on. So it is actually useful to, you know, do a bunch of things. So sort of prime all the caches and then take your snapshot and then do some more and then do it again. And at that point, the caches should have already been primed before you started. And so really, if it keeps growing each time, that's wrong. Eventually it'll go
forward into three things, come back, it'll grow. Go forward into three things, come back, and it should be the same.
It should be the same. Roughly. Ish, exactly. Yeah. So, and that's the beauty, is you get to make those calls when you look at the data. So in this case, we did a few things, and we came back to the original. Let's see, did I do that? Yeah. So I've come back to my home screen, if you will. Mm-hmm. So I kind of expect it to not, you know, to be about the same. Maybe there's a little caching going on, but mostly about the same. So let's find out if that's true. We're going to take another heap snapshot. And again, leak. And you'll notice that one of the things that it's doing is it actually noticed that there was already some. The name that it wanted to give this file was the name of the app, which is leakyappcs, and then .gcdump. But it noticed that we already had one of those, and rather than overwrite it, because we kind of know that you probably do want to take several snapshots, it's sort of smart enough to, you know, name it something else. So it goes, it notices that names it leakyappcs1.gcdump. Okay, so now I've collected two of them, and so now I have two gcdumps. And we can open this second one, and here it is. And now we can see that it's using 12 megabytes. So there was 12 megabytes that's probably leaked. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly what's going on there. And so now in this particular case, because the original one was so small in comparison to the leak, like here, half a megabyte over here, 12 megabytes, we don't actually need the baseline. We can just sort of assume the baseline was zero and we would probably find it because it's so much bigger than everything else. But in normal life, that's not true. Normally the leak is 10% or something like that. So it's going to get lost in the noise. So what you do in those circumstances is you go to the after one, in this case the 12 meg one, but you also have the baseline up. So you bring up both of those, and then on the after image, you can go to this diff view. And what it will do is it will populate this with every other view that's open. Mm-hmm. It says, which one do you want me to diff with? And so you'll pick the other one. And now you will get, notice that here I only have 11 megabytes, and I basically subtracted off that half a megabyte.
Nice.
And this is now a sort of node by node diff.
Nice.
Now, in this case, it's super easy, but sometimes the diffs are a problem because you'll see large negative numbers. You'll notice here you can now get negative numbers if the baseline is allocated more of anything than the after image. Well, then that will show up as negative. Mm-hmm. And the problem there is that if you have large positives and large negatives, you don't know if they cancel out or not, right? They might, right? Mm-hmm. And so what you need to do is, and this is in the instructions, by the way, and the videos for this, is that you cannot look at a diff until you can look at this view right here, this by name view, and you don't see any big negative numbers. If you see big negative numbers, well, they might cancel anything that's as big. Yeah. And so you have to figure out a way of making them the same and cancel, and then it eliminates the negative numbers, and then whatever's left over is going to be your leak. And so in this case, we don't have that problem. And there are techniques for doing that. In this case, I don't have to do them. And we can see immediately what our leak is. Well, our leak is that 6 megabytes of that 11 meg is this thing called Leapy App My Node, and 5 megabytes of that is this thing called Leaky App CS Item Detail Page.
So what's RCW on the front?
So RCW stands for Runtime Callable Wrapper. So this is a Windows Store application, and so all of the GUI objects are actually COM objects. They're Windows runtime objects, and if you need to call those from within managed code, you need a facade, a proxy that, and that's what called the runtime callable wrapper.
Yep.
And so in the heap, there isn't the COM object that's over on native land. It's a runtime callable wrapper. And so we prefix anything that is an RCW with the prefix, so you know that.
So you get RCWs for WinRT API, and you get CCW, COM callable wrapper, for straight Win32 apps. Is that roughly analogous?
What'll happen is you'll actually see, in fact, one of the things that you'll see on the roots view is that we also have COM callable wrappers. They act as roots. Now, COM callable wrapper is a COM object which is backed up by whose true implementation is .NET.
Okay.
And for us in .NET land, that acts as a root. We know that there's somebody out there who is referring to us, mm-hmm. and we can't kill that object until that COM object dies. And so it actually shows up as roots on our tree called CCWs.
Okay.
So, and in fact, you can get loops between those, which is really problematic.
So if you've done a Marshall for iUnknown, given it to someone, they've done it at ref.
Exactly.
That will be reflected here, and that's what's keeping it alive.
And that is what's keeping it alive, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you'll always have a few of them, because if you're a WinRT app, because the system is injecting them for you. Otherwise, the GUI system couldn't keep all of your .NET, what's keeping your .NET objects alive? If not, the GUI system is usually what's keeping all of your GUI objects alive. Mm. And so those always will end up reflected as CCWs. Mm-hmm. So this is not unusual that, in fact, large amounts of the heap are held onto somehow through RCWs, which is what this is showing us. It's showing us that 6 megabytes is through static variables, and 5 megabytes is through WinRT objects. So, and in fact, you'll see exactly why that is as we drill in. Okay, so normally you could go top down, and you could keep opening this up. And in this particular case, it's so easy that you can go top down or bottom up, and it doesn't matter. You'll find the problem. But normally I recommend people go bottom up. That is, we look over here and we say, what do you have a lot of? What is using up all of your space, your memory in this case? And we see, there's Leaky App My Node. And so again, you can double click on this, or you could have also right clicked on it and said, go to caller. Well, it really is refers to, but callers, which is referred from. So this is saying, I have a whole bunch of objects called my node. I would like to find the path back to root. What is keeping that alive? Why did the GC keep this object? Mm. Well, the GC kept the object because there was a path from one of the roots. So what is that path? And here it is. The path was, we were in the root, there was a .NET root, there was a static variable. There's a static variable called s_mycache in the detail page class, which then has a dictionary, and which in turn holds on to this particular node. And it actually, we actually know there were 6 of them, mm-hmm. and each one, and there were a total of 6 megabytes. So in fact, there was 1 megabyte chunks. Mm-hmm. So whenever you click on 2 things in Perfview, it does some helpful arithmetic on whatever you clicked on. So if I click on this and that, it clicks the sum, the subtraction, multiplication, division, just because they might be handy.
Yeah.
And in this case, the division is quite handy. So we know that there were 6 objects that were 1 megabyte beat. We're already sort of feeling the suspicion here, right? We probably clicked six times on that view. And in fact, if we go back to that other one, we sort of see that,
Okay, and we just had a little technical difficulty. Do not adjust your set, but we had a battery failure and we're back on. There may be a little time jump if you're, you know, one of those people who looks at the timestamps on Vance's desktop. But we're back. All right, so we were looking at 1 megabyte per allocation.
That's right. And, so we were tracking down. We started with this diff here. And we said, okay, here's the diff. We have 11.9 megabytes, and there's 6 megabytes in this leaky node and 5 megabytes in this item page. And we double-clicked on this, which gives us this path to root. Mm-hmm. And so at this point, usually, you've got something to work with. That is, this now requires a knowledge of the program to sort of understand why that might be a bad thing or a good thing. So we're seeing that, okay, well, there's this static variable which has this thing called cache. And cache already is a big red flag, right? Because caches, if you don't get rid of things in the cache, they'll just hold on to things forever and ever. And so, in fact, this is exactly what's going on here, is that there's just this static variable cache. It's a dictionary, and it has my nodes in it. And I can actually show you the source code for it. And it is literally, so right here is what's going on, is that when we navigated to this thing, we populated the cache with this node, and we just never throw it away. And as simple as that is, it happens all the time, is that people think, hey, I need to speed this up. I put in a cache, and I don't ever delete things from it. And this bites you. And so these things show up all the time. And the beauty of it is that they really are very easy to debug, so because you'll have this static variable, probably a dictionary or something like that.
So there's an approach to have some like time to live thing on your code, so a timer fires every once in a while and ages the cache out? Or?
So usually what you want to do is when you put things into the cache, you look at how big it is, and if it's too big, you start chucking things. There are other ways of doing it. So when I do it myself, I have a class whose job it is to be a cache, and it does those details for you. So in other words, you say put something in, and then it will decide how big it's allowed to get, and then trim as necessary. But you have to have something. You know, sometimes you don't need an ejection policy because you really do know that you're not going to keep doing it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. The problem here was that, you know, if you kept going back and forth between two pages, something a user might do, it will just keep growing. For example, one way of solving this would be to intern it. That is, when you remember your item detail page, and if you go back to the same one, then you'll reuse that exact one, and then you won't recreate it and make the leak. But it does mean that if you go to lots of different ones, you have a different kind of leak. So, you know, this is the trick. You have to decide those kinds of things. Cool. So that's one. Now, that one's super trivial. The other one that's the other leak, we only dealt with the 6 megabytes, so we do the same thing over here and we double click on it and we open those up and we look at what's keeping it alive, and we see that there's this path here from root to this leaky to this item detail page, and it's going through this thing called a routed event handler, and then it goes through some this CCW, which is a root, as I mentioned before. And then, pretty much that's the root. We group all the CCWs together, but it's not a real different object, which is what this node is, as well as these two nodes. These are all pseudo nodes. They don't really exist. They're just grouping. But anyway, so what this means is that what it's saying is that the GUI system has an event handler, which is pointing at our item detail page, and that's what's holding it alive. That is, so the GUI system is holding this alive through an event handler. And in the interests of time, I'll just show you what went wrong and how easy it is to fall into this trap, which is that this is fairly a common bug that people run into, which is that in my item detail page, they needed something to react to when the window size changed. Mm-hmm. And there's this nice event, windows current size change. I will register a callback so that it will do something when that happens. So I say, okay, I'm going to register my event handler down here with the size changed. No problem. The problem is that this is a global variable in the GUI subsystem. That is, you've asked the windowing system, please call me back when the window changed. And you've said, call me back. That is this particular item detail page.
This is
so it has a reference to that item detail page in that callback. Otherwise, it can't call you back. Mm-hmm. And so it's holding on to you. And then you die. Everyone else is dead. All other references except you. And so you leak. And every time you create, this is a very common kind of an error. You can imagine how easy it is to do this.
Yeah.
So what's the answer? The answer is that when you apply, the GC can't help you in this particular case, is what it boils down to, is that just like in unmanaged code, when you take references to unmanaged things, you need to sort of, you have to free them explicitly. This is another example of something where you have to free it explicitly. So I need a finalizer on this class that deregisters, like does the size change minus equals of this property, that removes me from this global thing. So I have this global thing out there that's referring to me. So when I die, I have to undo it. Now, even that's a little tricky because I'm not dead until this thing loses its reference to me. So you sort of have to know when you're going to die. You can't rely on the GC to do it for you. So this is just one of those ugly little problems that you have with the GUI system. And the best answer you have a bunch of bad choices. You can either use a weak handle. So you can actually have a weak handle that points at your... So this item change can point at a thing whose sole purpose in life is to have a weak handle to your item page, at which point it won't die, but your item page can die.
Yeah.
So you've fixed a lot of the leak, but you haven't fixed it perfectly.
Yeah.
Or you can have some sort of explicit deallocation, which is painful, but it is something that you have to do. So those are the two kinds of leaks that we're going to show you.
Awesome.
And you can see that in this particular case, because the leaks were so big, Perfview pointed you right at them. But you also have the full power of the viewer to sort of slice and dice and to drill into things. And we're not going to show you that here for lack of time.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks for watching again. As always, if you have questions or comments, put them in the show notes down there or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And we will be back, I think, again next week with Vance again, with more fun goodness with
Perfume.
Exceptions. All right, cool. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
Have a good week.
Bye.